Welcome to episode 12 of the Oxfordshire Teacher Training Podcast. This is going to be the final episode of our first season of putting things together, and so it seems really sensible for me to sit down this morning with Patrick Garton, the director of Oxfordshire Teacher Training. Welcome, Patrick.
Hello, thank you very much.
Great pleasure for you to be with us today. Now, if you think back to episode 3 of this season, I spoke with Sally Price about a book that she'd written all about wellbeing for the Early Career Teacher series that Critical Publishing are putting together. And the focus for our discussion this morning with Patrick is going to be about a book that he's writing for the same series, but all about behaviour. So, Patrick, I suppose the first question I want to ask you is perhaps, why did you choose to pitch to write a book all about behaviour for this series?
Yeah, good question. I think, one of our crucial roles in initial teacher training is trying to establish what is most important for people at those very early stages of their career. And having worked now with hundreds of people as they've come into the profession, right from that kind of pre-application stage through the recruitment process, through their training year, and then on into their early career as newly qualified teachers and beyond, I think behaviour is the single most significant thing that if we don't get that right, if we don't support people with developing the right skills and approaches, then really it's very difficult for other things to fall into place successfully. And I think possibly over time, it's a thing that I've seen there's a bit of a gap in some approaches to ITT that means that people sometimes are left floundering a little bit, slightly rudderless, trying to kind of pick their way through without a clear roadmap, as it were. And by no means is that to say that there's only one route to being successful in terms of your classroom management. But I think there are some well-established ways of thinking and approaches. And I think if we can help teachers early in their career, right at the outset, be clear, be focused, make sensible decisions to actually practice some approaches, to build routines and ways of thinking, then actually we can get them flourishing with all of the other aspects of being a classroom teacher much more effectively and much more quickly.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's probably fair to say that when we recruit people onto our programs and we ask them about the things that they're perhaps most concerned about or most worried about in their training year, talking about behaviour management is probably the single most common response that we get from them, isn't it?
Most definitely. And again, that's why I think we need to attend to it so fully at this early stage. I think back to when I started, there was very little discussion about it. I think you just kind of picked up habits. Quite a lot of it was about kind of force of personality that was 25 plus years ago. There was sometimes a slightly combative approach to the classroom, which I think in lots of respects we've moved beyond that. But of course, schools still operate in very, very different ways and have very different approaches. And I think helping people to see that although they may be in one environment and one context that might or might not be working, not all schools operate in the same way, and therefore all individual teachers operate in the same way across the system. And so helping people see some of that with clarity early on, again, I think helps demystify what is, as you say, a disconcerting sometimes and quite challenging aspect.
Yeah. So let's start to dig in a little bit more deeply into the kind of themes that you're going to be covering in your book. And perhaps we'll start off by thinking about how you might develop your identity as a teacher.
I think there is a really interesting aspect in terms of developing who you want to be as a teacher and being quite conscious about that, being intentional about developing in part the kind of ethos that you want to embody as an individual, thinking about your values and your motivation. Those are really important things to draw on, but then thinking about how they translate into the systems and the routines that you will have, but also thinking carefully about the kind of character that you will be, that the students see and interact with from very early on. You know, one of the things I talk about a little bit in the book is, you know, that sort of slightly kind of home truthy kind of idea that really the only behavior we can really control is our own. And so it's through developing the right demeanor, the right approaches, the right routines, and cultivating those quite consciously that allows us to build an identity that students can relate to, that is consistent and that is clear. And you know, and some of that comes down to, you know, the very pragmatic things about how you use the space in the classroom, thinking intentionally about where you stand or where you sit at different stages. You know, if you're explaining a concept, if you're remodeling, you know, use part of the room for that. Thinking about, you know, the use of the room in terms of the threshold, the doorway, welcoming people in and being intentional there. Thinking about things like, you know, the use of your voice. We obviously all have our own voice. But being quite thoughtful about, you know, when we raise our voice, when we lower it, particularly for people in those early interactions, thinking about how you come across when you're under pressure, and when you may be yourself feeling quite anxious and quite stressed, you know, so very practical things about consciously trying to speak more slowly so that you're not gabbling. Thinking about scripting some of your explanations, thinking about key responses that you will use, scripting those in terms of addressing behavioural challenges. So that you've got a bank of things to draw on rather than constantly be having to kind of think on your feet in those early challenging kind of lessons and sequences of lessons. So that's what I mean by the identity. I think, you know, it's not just playing a role that is completely separate from who you are. The identity you have in the classroom is by definition has to be a significant part of who you are as a person. But it's about cultivating specific things that the children you work with, the young people you work with, will interact with and will see, in the way that actors work, you know, very in a very focused way to cultivate certain dispositions and you know, things like body language and facial expressions. All of those things really help, and those are things that we can control and we can practice and we can rehearse in a very considered way, proactively, rather than simply kind of walking into a classroom feeling a bit anxious and then being in that reactive context where it doesn't feel like we're really in control of the environment in the way that we want to be.
I'm guessing, obviously, one of the things that you'll be talking about in the book, and certainly things that we talk about on our program anyway, is the sense that being able to actually practice the behaviours and responses you have to challenging situations. So rather than trying to make sure that everything is always wonderful all the way through your time in your placement scores, actually putting yourself under that element of pressure is essential, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those are things that, again, that you can practice. I remember, you know, I tell our associate teachers this a lot. I remember the first few assemblies I took in my first job, where as head of RE, I was expected to take quite a lot of assemblies. And, you know, those were quite nerve-wracking with the whole school and all of your colleagues there as well. And, you know, actually going into the hall the night before, you know, imagining it full, thinking about projecting my voice to the back of the room, thinking about, you know, getting a music stand so that I could put my notes on it to remind me so that I wasn't holding them and they were, you know, flapping because my hands were trembling so much. In the same way, you know, that musicians and actors and performers and public speakers always will be thinking in a very focused way. And I think you can do lots of those things, you know, as it were, in the comfort of your own living room, looking in the mirror, you know, about facial expressions. If you want to, you know, if you want to quieten a group of people down, you know, what kind of expressions would be useful there? If you want to be supportive and show empathy, again, being really conscious about those things, because those are all of the bits that young people pick up on. And one of the things that I think sometimes when you're watching experienced teachers in the same way as when you're watching actors, you know, you forget what's going on behind the scenes. And in these early stages of a teacher's career, actually being very intentional about it, being deliberate about practicing and thinking carefully about those things can really help to establish the kind of person that you can then be relaxed in being, because you've thought it through, and those habits once formed really will last, you know, for your whole lifetime in the profession.
I think this is kind of leading in very, very much into perhaps the next area that we can have a closer think about, which is this idea of how once you've got an understanding of what the basics are, how that leads into the relationships that you are forming with the children that you're working with and with other colleagues.
One of the things that we always advocate for all of our associate teachers is obviously observing lots of other colleagues in the classroom. And that's brilliant. You can pick up so many things. I think one of the bits where we tend to suggest a little bit of caution, I guess, is actually sometimes in this context, because what you can sometimes see when you walk into the classroom of an experienced teacher who seems to have brilliant relationships can quite often be sometimes quite flippant, can, you know, there's a lot of humour. It's actually quite easy to forget that those surface level things that you're seeing have been built up sometimes over many, many years by that individual teacher, and certainly over many interactions with those individual students as well. And it can sometimes look like going straight to the kind of humour, the quirkiness, the gimmickiness, that is present there on the surface of the lesson. Actually, it's easy to forget that that's based on real attention to detail in building up the basics over time. And, you know, by basics, I mean lots of things, really. But the most fundamental thing that we say to everybody is, as soon as you can, as quickly as you can, get to know the kids' names, get to know a little bit about them. You know, there's lots of colleagues who'll be able to share information. Try not to always draw on the kind of the views that others give, because to an extent, obviously, you need it to be your own understanding and your own relationship, and kids are different with different colleagues. But the more you can give that sense to the students that you know them and you know who they are, really then is helpful when you're talking about the basics in terms of routines, in terms of lining up, in terms of how you expect things to be done at the start of the lesson, how you expect people to conduct themselves when you're doing some questioning or when you're doing extended individual tasks. So thinking about the routines and the clarity of those systems and processes, as well as knowing them as individuals, really then allows you to have a deeper relationship. I think sometimes it can seem like the relationship comes first and then the other things fall into place. And that is how it is as people become more experienced in the classroom and more skilled. But I think early on, we sometimes have problems with our associate teachers because they're going straight to the relationships bit without focusing on all of the foundations that more experienced colleagues will have gone through in different ways over the years.
Something else that I know that we've been talking about before is this idea about clarity of expectations. And you talk about them to aiming for them to be persistent and then consistent.
I think early on, really being clear about what you expect is vital, and then sticking with it. So the persistent bit, I think, you know, people talk about being persistent to get to the point that you want to be at, and then being consistent to stay there. And I think that distinction is important, you know, for people in those early stages. You know, we will always say, and I'm a really strong advocate for periods of silence in almost every lesson. And I've written about silence in the book, and I've written and spoken about silence elsewhere. I think it, you know, silence is a powerful thing, and can be, it can have shades of the spiritual about it. It can be a very unifying experience. And so silence is a thing that we would always strive to have periods of that in our lessons in different ways. Certainly at a very basic level, if you're talking, you don't want other people talking. And sometimes for people very early on, that's very unnerving. You know, and it can feel like you're waiting and you're waiting and there's bubbling going on and people chatting or whatever. And so the persistence there is the important bit. Keeping going, keeping focused, and then explaining when you get there, you know, this is what I expect, this is what this feels like. And within that expectation, again, reminding the children of why that's important. It's important that we have this. So it's not just I expect this, but I expect this because, and these are the reasons why this is important. And then the consistency bit is how you maintain that. You know, keep coming back to it. You know, getting to a point where the lesson functions well, it is brilliant, but it won't stay like that, you know, unattended. So the consistency bit and the reminding of expectations, and that doesn't need to be great long kind of lectures every lesson. Just thinking about ways of maintaining it, keeping it running, you know, a finely tuned machine just needs bits of attention and checking in each time, but doing the legwork early on. And so the thing about expectations is, I suppose, with again with people coming into the profession, they see what other people are doing, or they see what kids are doing in other people's lessons, and in a sense they expect it's going to be like that for them. And again, that's the needing to think through. Those individuals have worked on their expectations, they've been clear about what they want and need, and you know, at a psychological level in any relationship, if you assume things without explaining it, so if there's assumptions without the clarity, then things go wrong, which is why I think the talking about what you expect, and to an extent therefore also what students can expect in return of you and of each other, that's really powerful, and it allows you again in an intentional way and in a focused way to be clear about what you want the classroom to be like, and then you can follow that up with why you want it to be like that. And that why bit is so positive as well, just to say, you know, I want a classroom that's like this so that we can maximize you and your progress and your, you know, you're developing your skills and your love of the subject. So none of these things about expectations and routines are necessarily about negativity. And I think that, again, is sometimes a barrier that we have to work through with people early in their profession, that there's sometimes this sense of things being you know, a bit negative, a bit you know, that if you've got rules that it's all a bit militaristic, it's a bit impersonal. And actually what we're all about is saying, you know, you can be positive, you can be enthusiastic, you can be optimistic, and all of that will be even more the case when you're clear about what you want and how you want people to engage with you. And I suppose that expectations bit, then we follow through to quite a micro level sometimes, you know, and again, being clear in this period of the lesson for the next 5 minutes, what I'm going to do is explain this process to you. And so during that period of time, what I want you to be doing is, you know, focusing on my explanation, looking at, you know, the image or the diagram that we've got there. And this isn't a period for questioning or for note-taking, it's simply focusing on the explanation. And then in the next session, or the next section rather, of the lesson, okay, so now what I want you to do is undertake this written task, and my expectations here are this. So again, students will build up an understanding of what you want through you saying, this type of part of a lesson, this is how we'll do things. In this bit, this is how we'll do things. The means of engagement, I suppose, is what we're talking about. I think that may come from Doug Lamov's Teach Like a Champion. What's expected of the kids at the different stages of the lesson? And for them, that's really reassuring. You know, if they've got a question, they know that there will be a period in the lesson when they will be able to ask the question. But at this precise moment, what is happening is you're explaining and modelling. And that's what is, you know, what they're doing then is simply focusing and listening in.
Yeah, and of course that word simple is the key word there, that sense of simplicity of approach, so that what you're doing, you know, for all of the complexities that are going on behind all of this, having simple routines and simple systems that mean that everybody understands what's expected of them at any given time, enables all of those habits to stick, I suppose, for for the learners as well as for the teachers themselves.
That's it, and I think, you know, that bit about habits that you've mentioned is so crucial. Again, one of the things that we notice working with lots of people in this early stage, and what's come out through some of the research and discussions that I've been doing with them, is lots of people inevitably fall into the trap early on of trying something, it not really working, and then they immediately try something else. And I think, again, you can have sometimes colleagues who have quite prolonged periods early in their career where they try one thing, it doesn't really take immediately, and so they try something else, and then they're in this kind of constant state of flux where they're rethinking things, they're having to re-explain it to the kids. And really what's needed is just, you know, a sequence of lessons where you just stick with the one thing, or the simple sequence of things, because, you know, for all of us, embedding things takes time. You know, habits are, you know, sometimes take quite a while to form. Once they're formed, of course, and this is why the thing about routines and systems and sticking with it is so important, because once we've formed habits, they're incredibly difficult to break. So investing the time early in forming them really does pay off, but it can be that disconcerting thing for people early on where they think, oh, you know, I tried that for the first 20 minutes of the lesson, it didn't work, so I'm now going to try this, and then I'm going to try that. And actually what we need to say to people is just stick with it. It may not be perfect immediately. You know, in lots of situations, people talk about the kind of implementation dip. You know, you introduce something and it doesn't immediately go as well as you want it to. And that's the crucial bit where people become disillusioned and disheartened and think, well, this system isn't going to work for me, so let's scrap it. And actually it's working through that, holding your nerve a little bit. And then actually when those things start to bear fruit, sticking with it as well. And again, that goes back to the kind of persistent to get there, consistent to maintain it, working that process through so that the habits... And habits are really interesting. You know, you can see the same group of children go from one set, you know, one room in a school to another, and behave very, very differently. And so the kind of the physical cues about the habits, and it's interesting trying to work out why that is. Sometimes I think it is the case that, you know, students will know in one room where one particular teacher is based, what the expectations are, and then those routines become so embedded that the habits are formed, and the reference points for the habits are simply that they're in one room rather than another. You know, and that's the kind of gold dust that you want to get to, that, you know, a student knows just by seeing you as the teacher, or by being in the environment in which you operate, what is expected of them, and then they kind of click into those habitual responses. You can get there, people do get there, and it's the sticking with it that I think is the crucial bit.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Patrick. So as we get to the end of this episode and this first season of our podcast, we hope that you've really enjoyed listening in to the many conversations that I've had with some fantastic people over the last few months. We hope that everybody involved in education does get a chance to recharge their batteries at some point over the next few months. It's been a particularly challenging time. We hope that you all keep safe, and we hope that you continue to love working and working alongside children, and also in the world of initial teacher training. Thanks, Patrick.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, Matthew.